You are listening to The Point from MC3 in Lewistown, Pennsylvania. Check us out on the web at mc3church.org or find us on Facebook at mc3church. MC3, it's like nothing you'd expect.
Here's my utility belt. And no, I'm not being Batman for Halloween. I've got everything that I may possibly need. I've got, let's see, the newspaper, if I need to read the news. I've got it right here in my belt. And, what else do I have over here? Well, if I need to make a note, I've got a notepad and my Operation Christmas Child pen that I can use to make a note. And if I need to know anybody's phone number, I've got the phone book right here so I can look anybody up and get that anytime I need it. And let's see what else. I want to put some of these back. I don't want to, you know. I've got a flashlight. Not a very bright flashlight, but I've got a flashlight, you know, in case I need to look at things. And what else do I have here? Oh, I put the notepad back. Well, of course, if I need to listen to music, I've got my my stereo right there, conveniently connected to me, so I've got it there. Calculator, because if I ever need to, you know, do mathematical type things, quadratic equations and sines and cosines, which we all do, I've got that. And of course, I have my Bible, which is very important. This was given to me when I was in college by my parents. It was great when you went to Bible college because you didn't have to lug something big like this around. You could just carry this little thing. And not quite as spiritual because it's not as big, but, you know, it's a trade-off I was willing to make. But I'm just kidding about that. Then what else? I have my camera here. Got a camera in case I need to take pictures. This is a whole 2 megapixels. Yes, 2.0 megapixels. Look at the viewfinder on that puppy. You see that thing? You got to watch out. The clarity is incredible. You might actually see more than you want. But I've got my camera there, and of course, if I need to play a game, I've got Connect 4 right here with me. So anytime you want to play, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 2, 3, 4, 5, that's a fair game. And you can play that, and what else? Oh, if you need to watch TV, I've got a DVD player. If I ever need to do that, you know, pop the old movie in and go with that. And of course, a phone. And so if I need to make any phone calls, I've got that handy. I think it's about everything I've got on here. I have an atlas in case I need to get directions or I need to find a way to get somewhere. I've got that there, and I've got everything that I could possibly need when I find myself living life. I have everything I need. You know, who knows? I could go somewhere and be like, oh, where am I? Hey, I've got an atlas. Hold on a second. What city are we in? Hey, if we were in Utah, I could tell you. Or if we were, we're in Pennsylvania. Look at that. How is that? We're not on that side of Pennsylvania, though. No, there we are. Right there. Anyway, but I've got an atlas in case we need, you know, basically anything comes up, I am good to go. I am set. I have got everything that I could possibly need to go through life. Anything that might come across, you know, my daily adventures, I am ready to go with it. Unfortunately, this is heavy. This is doing things to my hips right now that is going to leave a mark later. I can tell you that right now. And my belt is like, it's just uncomfortable. The other side of this thing, besides the weight and the fact that it's cutting into me, is it's terribly inconvenient. Because if I were to walk somewhere, you know, aside from the fact that I'm making a whole lot of noise and there's not much keeping them from falling out, it's really inconvenient. It slows me down. It gets in the way. And even though I've got everything that I could possibly need, it's keeping me from accomplishing what I need to do. It's slowing me down from doing the normal things of life. And so if I wanted to have all of these things, you know, I can get you a belt like this, and I can hook you up with this stuff. I mean, dude, I can hook you up with a 2-megapixel camera, all right? And a phone like this, you can't even find stuff like this anymore. I can give you this stuff. Or, to make life easier, you could have one of these. Because my smartphone does everything that is on my belt. I can watch TV on my phone with Netflix. I can listen to music. I've got a map and an atlas. I've got a phone directory. I can read the news. I've got my Bible on here, YouVersion app. I'm not making any money on that. I've got a calculator. I've got a flashlight on the back of it. I've got tons of games on here. I could do all of that. And see, here's the thing. I can either choose this or this and accomplish the same purposes. You follow me so far, right? But one of them is going to slow me down. One of them is going to keep me from doing the best that I can. And that would be my phone, because it's so annoying, because technology is annoying. No, that would be the belt. And here's the thing. Many of us... Ooh, that's the part that's not supposed to fall. That would be my microphone. Ooh, got the microphone. Wait. No, I got a cord there. Little help, Kirk. You hold that part. Like, it's caught on the antenna there. See the antenna? It's like, no wonder that hurt. I was sticking places. Okay. Oh, that's okay. That's broken anyway. All right, I want to rebuild it. You got the belt. I'll take the pack. All right. See, that was convenient, wasn't it? There. All right, that'll work right there. Thank you. So anyway, I had a point. What was my point? My point is that both of them accomplish the same thing, but one thing slows me down and doesn't let me do it the best possible way. And the problem with this is that I'm not very good at it. I can't do the things I want to do. And many of you and me live life the exact same way. Because we want to accomplish things, we want to have all the stuff, but we find ourselves so overwhelmed, so weighed down by so much stuff that we can't accomplish what God has called us to do. Some of us are stressed out. Some of you are burned out. And in the words of Prince Humperdinck, some of you are very put out. You'll get that reference later. Because we're so busy carrying around stuff that weighs us down. We're so busy being busy that we can't accomplish the very simple things that God has called us to do. And so this morning I want to talk to you about simplifying. This is the last week in the Go series, and this kind of wraps things up. But here's what I want you to get this morning, and that's this. Stay simple, even though life wants to make you busy. See, God has called us to do some very specific, very, I would say, simple things. Not necessarily easy, but simple things. But we can't even do those simple things because we're too busy carrying around all this stuff. And we could just simplify some things, lighten our load, and be able to accomplish those things much more efficiently, much more effectively. Frankly, maybe not even efficient or effective. Frankly, just doing some of the things that we have not been doing, that God has called us to do. So I want you to get that idea, that stay simple, even though life wants to make you busy. And I do not need to say anything about the last half of that phrase. I don't need to tell you, you know, here's how life might make you busy, in case you're not sure. We know that. We know that life is busy, that life, there's constantly things that are filling up our schedule. And we'll talk about some of those things and what that will look like in a little bit. But the deal is that God has called us to do some things, and we can't because we're so busy carrying all these extra things, slowing us down. And I want you to understand, if you look at that pack, everything that I shared there is nothing wrong with those things. Understand, there's nothing sinful about an atlas. There's nothing sinful about music. I mean, I guess there could be if you do it inappropriately, whatever. But in themselves, there is nothing wrong or sinful with those things. But together, those things weigh me down. And so I want to look at this. I want to look at a passage in 1 Peter. And Brian, who does our discussion guides for our prime groups, was kind of confused because, and maybe some of you guys are putting Ignition together, like, how in the world does this tie into what he's talking about? But I want to read this passage in 1 Peter, and I'm reading from the New Living Translation because I like the way it's worded. If you have YouVersion, you can get the YouVersion app, YouVersion.com. You can download it on iTunes, the Google Play Store, or on Amazon Kindle. But 1 Peter 2, verse 9 through 10, and I'm going to read it from the screen because I've got an NIV here. Peter writes, and this is 1 Peter, he's writing, his name is Peter. He says, but you are not like that, and we're not going to worry about what you're not like for now. But he says, for you are a chosen people. You are royal priests. Nope, let me back up for a second here. You are chosen. Peter is writing to the church. Okay, and he's saying, we're the church. You are chosen. by God. He says, you are royalty. You are royal priests. The priests were the ones that were set aside to do the spiritual work in the Old Testament. He says, you are a royal priest. You are a holy nation. You're a nation, and not like because we have a constitution or anything like that. The idea of a nation, we're a group of people that God has said, you are holy. You have been made holy through Jesus Christ. He says, we are God's very own possession. God owns us. He calls us His own. You know how that is. Like, you've got your kids. Like, these are my kids, and my kids are always perfect, but everybody else's kids aren't. And I'm not saying that seriously, but I'm saying, you know, that attitude we have as parents, it's like, well, these are our possession. You know, they're my family. They're family. They're blood. You know, it's all good. And God is saying, you're blood. You're family. You're God's possession. As a result, you can show others the goodness of God. For He called you out of the darkness of our sin, the darkness of our destiny of hell, but through Jesus Christ has called us into His wonderful light. That we are now in light because of Jesus. He says, once you had no identity as a people. Once you were just meaningless nobodies. You were all I, we were nobody. But now we are God's people. He says, once you didn't have any mercy, you hadn't received any mercy, you were done. You were stuck in your sin. He says, but now you have received God's mercy. He goes on then and says something like this. Dear friends, I warn you, as temporary residents and foreigners, to keep away from worldly desires that wage war against your very souls. Be careful to live properly among your unbelieving neighbors, that then, even if they accuse you of doing wrong, they will see your honorable behavior and they will give honor to God when He judges the world. So, and we're going to talk about this here in a minute, but this passage is all about being simple. And I know it might not make sense right away, but hopefully, if I do any kind of a good job and perhaps God, not perhaps, if God chooses to work through His Holy Spirit, then maybe it'll make some sense. But I want you to understand some things. Peter is sharing some things to us. And obviously, he's talking to the church, and that's us. If you're a Christ follower, if you're a believer in Jesus Christ, if you consider yourself a disciple of Christ, you are the church. This building is not the church. This building is a building, and this building might not be here in 3 days. We'll see what happens. You are the church. We are the church. I am the church as a follower of Jesus. So he says some things, and I just want to talk about it. He's making a proposal to us as the church. And he shares a few things there, which I kind of took my time on verses 9 and 10. He basically says, you know, you guys, you, we've got it all. We have been chosen by God. We are a holy people. We are a chosen nation. We are royalty. God thinks that we are pretty incredible. And God doesn't think we're incredible just because you're really good on, you know, playing rock band or because, you know, you've got a nice high IQ or a great GPA. God thinks you're incredible because Jesus Christ died for you. And if you have trusted Him, therefore you are redeemed by Jesus. And that makes you incredible. That makes you amazing. That makes you someone that's not just left and stuck in your own sin and your own miasma. I don't even know what that means. But that you are chosen. God has picked you. God has picked me. There's something special about us. And so he's going to share some things. But the point of this verse is that you need to realize that you're not just some Joe Schmo. Unless your name's Joe Schmo. But you're somebody. You're somebody important. You're somebody unique. And God says, look, you've got what it takes. Now, live like it. And so there's some things that Peter says in this passage. The first thing we find in verse 11, and it's talking about being good. In verse 11, Peter says that we need to be good. He says there in verse 11, and I'm going to read my version just because it's too hard to jump back and forth. He says, dear friends, I urge you as aliens and strangers in this world to abstain from sinful desires, or the version on the screen says to stay away from the worldly desires. He says, which war against your soul. He says, look, you're not normal. You're not ordinary everybody. Oh, I can't handle life. This is just the way it is. Got to take what comes. He says, no, you're a holy nation. You're royalty. You're set apart because of Jesus. He says, therefore, you need to start being good. He says there, keep away from worldly desires. that wage war against your very souls. He says, look, you're temporary residents and foreigners, which means this isn't our home, okay? You know, you might think this is your home, but there's something way better that God's got in store for us. He says, you're just passing through. And that's what those words mean. This temporary resident, this foreigner. You know, you're just kind of coming through. He says, but keep away from the things of this world, from the sinful desires, from the junk that are trying to get you. They're waging war against your very souls. The world wants you to fit into its mold. And we'll talk about that next week. But the world wants you to become like the world. And I don't mean like, I know that's preacher talk. I know that's like, oh, you're a pastor. You talk about the world and all that. I'm just saying, stop screwing around with your sin. There is no reason for you to be sinning the way you do. There is no reason for you to be caught up in the lies that you're caught up in. Because you have been redeemed by Jesus. There's no reason to be caught up in the lust that you have been caught up in. Because you have been redeemed by Jesus. There's no reason to be caught up in the junk that you're doing. Because you have been redeemed by Jesus Christ. He says, do good. He says, dear friends, I warn you. I urge you. He's saying, look, guys. Man, you're not normal. You're amazing. You're incredible people. Because Jesus, my son, this is God speaking, not me. My son has died for you. So therefore, don't get caught up in the world. This isn't home. We're just passing through. The thing, too, is that Peter is talking to a group of people that know their Old Testament history. Okay, he's talking to the church, to people that are Jewish. And if you think back to the Old Testament, you know, maybe you saw the Prince of Egypt, or maybe you saw the Ten Commandments, or whatever, or you just know your Old Testament history. But there were two major spots where the people of Israel, the people of God, were in another country. And one of those was in Egypt. They were in Egypt. First, they were there as the ones that essentially saved the nation. But over time, they eventually became slaves there. And so they knew what it was like to live as people of God in the midst of a culture that had nothing to do with God. And he said, you know, I need you to stay set apart. I need you to stay different. Stay unique. Don't get caught up in it. And if you know any of the story of the Passover and the plagues, that if someone chose to get caught up in that when it was time to obey God and you know, for the Passover to put the blood on the doorpost, which I don't have time to get into all that, but essentially if they chose to not obey God, it cost them their lives, at least the lives of their firstborn. Because they got caught up. They forgot that, oh wait, no, we're not from here. We're not from around here. We belong somewhere else. And the same thing there, he talks about the other thing about the Israelites was Babylon. And we talked about this during the Word series, that they were taken in captivity to Babylon. And God said, look, don't marry with the people that are around here. Stay set apart. Stay unique. Because these other people are going to catch you up. They're going to catch you. They're going to get you caught up, involved in their stuff. And it's going to bring you down. And some of the Jews chose to marry people of that culture. And then in Jesus' time, they were known as Samaritans. Very good. Very good. And so they know what they're talking about. When Peter is writing and says, look, don't get caught up in this stuff. Stay away from them. Stay away from the sinful, from the worldly desires. He says, you're different than that. You don't need to be caught up in the junk that's there. And you know, dude, I'm not here to say it's easy. Peter didn't say it's easy. He says it's waging war against your very souls. War is hard stuff. It's not a simple, like, oh, okay. He says, but you need to keep away. He says to be, essentially be good. You need to being good is what he's talking about in this part. And we need to focus on that. And some of us, and I know there's risk in this, I guess. I mean, that's what grace is all about. But we just get caught up in stuff that we shouldn't. We do things that we shouldn't. And I know, and in this series, I'm going to kind of tie it all together at the very end this morning. And I know we talked about grace, and sometimes we get caught up in this grace idea, which is good. I would rather us get caught up in this grace and say, okay, hey, I'm forgiven. I've received God's mercy. That's what Peter says. But he says, look, even though you've received God's mercy, even though you've received grace, look, stop getting caught up in this stuff. And sin, and this is what Peter knows, this is what God knows, all sin does is lead to destruction and to hurt. And sin, you know, that's a fancy church word for stuff that you do that you shouldn't be doing. And, you know, for some of you, you're like, there's a thing right here now that's in the back of your mind. You're like, I know that's sin, but I'll just ignore that. He says, no, stay away, keep away. Don't get dragged down into that. He says it's time for people to be good. The problem with being good is that being good, and I'm not saying good work, well, let's just leave it at that. The problem with being good and avoiding sin is that we are so busy that we get involved in stuff that we don't even realize we're doing it because it happens on the fly. Because we get caught up in being busy. We get caught up in stuff. We get caught up in doing things. And before we know it, that thing that we got caught up in is sin. It's dragging us down. And we'll talk about that in a little bit. But he says being good. The second thing he says is that there needs to be seeing good. Seeing good. He says there in the first part of verse 12, he says, live such good lives among your unbelieving friends that they may see your good deeds and praise your Father in heaven. That's my quick paraphrase. He says, live good lives among your unbelieving friends. And here's the thing about that. He says, and can you throw that back up there for me, the verse? Because this is really important. He says, be careful to live, okay, properly among your unbelieving neighbors. There's a word in there, and yeah, preposition? It's some sort of grammatical thing. Among. Among means that you are with your unbelieving neighbors. That you are with people so that by being good, they can see it. The problem is many of us don't spend time being good around other people because we're so caught up in being busy. We don't have the opportunity for other people to see God working in us and God working through us because we spend all of our time DVRing every stinking TV show and making sure we get that. But we don't have time for that. We're so busy updating our status that people can't see what God is doing in our lives for real. Not on fake book, but on real book. But we're so busy. We don't have time for that. And Peter says, look, there needs to be some seeing good here. People don't know the difference that God has made in your life if they can't see you. You can't rub shoulders with people and have Jesus rub off if you're not rubbing shoulders with people. He says you need to be living properly among your unbelieving neighbors. And it goes back to the first thing. You need to be being good so that they can see something that's special, that's unique about you. Hey, how did you make it through that difficult time? Dude, I don't know, but Jesus really helped me. Was it easy? Was it fun? No, not at all. It hurt. But God got me through that. And that's from rubbing shoulders. That's from being with people. They say, wow, what is that? I want some of that. And many of you are in this room right now because of that. Because somebody rubbed shoulders with you and we're like, what is it that you've got? I want that. And that's what Peter's saying, is that we need to be with people so they can be seeing the good in our lives. But unfortunately, we get so busy that we can't. We get so busy that people can't be seeing that. We don't have time to be among people because we're too busy running amok. You can quote me on that. That's the best I can do. Sorry. So we need to be, in this passage, we see being good, we see seeing good, and the last thing we see is doing good. The last part of the verse is doing good. And just leave it on that where we are. He says, then, if you're with your neighbors and you're being the person that God has called you to be, if you're avoiding the sin, if you're staying away from the worldly desires, that even if they accuse you of doing wrong, they will see your honorable behavior. NIV says they will see your good deeds and they will give honor to God when He judges the world. And this is the cool thing about this, is that notice it doesn't say, be really good and be around people so they can see the good in you, so they can say, you are so good. Yay, you're so awesome. He says, no. We want people to see Jesus in us and they say, He is good. God is good. He is awesome. He has given us mercy. He has called me royalty. He has chosen me as His own. He says, let people see the good that you're doing. We need to be doing good. And again, coming back to the same idea, we don't have time to do good things for other people because we're too busy being busy. I mean, and let's face it, and this is what he says there. Even though, and Peter wrote this some 2,000 years ago, right? He says, even though they accuse you of doing wrong, back then, he knew, because it was happening then and it still happens now, that people don't like believers. People don't like Christians. And here, it's fair to say that the church, Christianity, does not have the best reputation, right? We've got, I don't know, the Inquisition. Hey, say that you follow Jesus or I will kill you. Good idea. We've got, you know, the Crusades. Oh, you don't believe in Jesus, so I'm going to kill you. That's not the most, I mean, I guess it is compelling, but it's not the best way to share your faith. I mean, we've got televangelists, right? Give money, give money, give money, give money, and God will make you happy. And it all comes about the money, and then all of a sudden these empires collapse because they're built on money. Or the affairs that happen. You've got priests. We get lumped in together with priests that are molesting children. We've got all of these things. I mean, what else do we have? The witch trials. You know, that was the same thing. It was the good, godly leaders in Massachusetts that were killing people because they must have been witches. We don't have the best reputation. There's a lot of stuff that adds to it. I mean, Westboro Baptist, what's the last word they use? Church. We're lumped with them. Excuse me, I'm going to vomit all over the floor. So that we have to do something different because people out there, our unbelieving friends, all they know is church. So you're one of those people that, you know, generations ago killed people because they didn't come. No, that's not me. I'm a little different. Oh, so you're one of those. Oh, you're a pastor. So that means you abuse children. No, I'm not really. Oh, wait, do you ask for lots of money? I mean, we do have an offering, but it's not. Peter says, look, if you're with them, just do good stuff and let Jesus rub off. Let Jesus come out, and so that when they see you and the good that you're doing, when they see your honorable behavior, when they see that you're doing good, they're going to say, "What? Yeah, but how is it that you're, you know, helping me and caring about me and living this good life, even though things are hard? How are you doing that? Because you're one of those Christians. You're a Christ follower. You're like Westboro, right? Like, this doesn't work." Because he says, you know, don't worry about them. They're going to accuse you of doing the wrong things, but just be living the right way. And I bring up the Westboro Baptist Church thing just because a guy that I read his blog said something about them, about how the church needs to show love to everybody, including people like that. And I would agree with him. The irony of that statement that he made was then retweeted by Westboro Baptist Church and called him a truth-loving whore or something like that. They were even saying you should love them. But anyway, but we get lumped in with all that stuff. And so he says, look, live good lives among your unbelieving friends so that when they see you doing good, they will glorify God in heaven and they will want some of that. I want me some of that. What is it that you've got? Give me that. Here's the deal, though. We're too busy. We're too busy. We don't have time to be living good, to be being good, so that people can be seeing good, because we're not even with those people. And we certainly don't have time to be doing good for them, because we're too busy. So Peter brings up this proposal. Okay, these are all great things. How do we do these things? How do we make sure that we're being good and people are seeing good and that we're doing good? The answer is to simplify. And I'm not saying become Amish. I'm not saying buy a smartphone, which are completely opposite ends of the spectrum, but yet mean the same thing, ironically. He says, get rid of all the weights, the things that are holding you down. He says, stay simple. Life wants to make you busy. But he says, look, the answer to this stuff is to get rid of the stuff that's slowing you down. And again, none of these things on this big old pack, none of these things are bad. None of them are sinful in themselves. But if they're keeping us from doing what God has called us to do, then we're definitely getting weighed down. So here's the thing. When we simplify, when we get rid of our busyness, when we make things, our burden lighter, it gives us what is often called margin. Everybody know what a margin is in a book? Yes. Just raise a hand. Just even if you don't know, just put your hand up so it's like, awesome, look at that. Two hands. Oh, even better. You're really spiritual, Scott. Do you have a big Bible, though? Okay, all right, good. So he's really, really spiritual. Two hands and a big Bible. But margin, that's that white space, the extra space around the book. And when we simplify, it gives us margin. It gives us white space. It gives us extra room to be doing the things that we're supposed to be doing, because usually we are so caught up in going and going and going that we don't have time for that. Simplicity, and this is pretty basic, straightforward stuff, and maybe it just makes sense. But when it comes to making margin, simplicity creates time. If we're not busy being busy, we have time, frankly, just to breathe, which was not an accident that was the song that we sang. He's the air we breathe. And so when we simplify our lives, when we're not so busy being busy, it creates time for, one, connecting with God. If you want to avoid sin, if you want to be able to fight this war that's waging against your soul, it comes from connection with God. It comes from reading Scripture. It comes from praying. It comes from studying, saying, what does that mean? It comes from spending time connecting with God. And that's what we need to be doing. The more we simplify, the more time we have for connecting with God. Here's some interesting two passages I want to bring up. One, you don't have to turn there because they're fast. From Mark 1, it says, very early in the morning, while it was still dark — I don't think Jesus really means that part, just because I don't like morning — but it says, Jesus got up, left the house, and went to a solitary place where he prayed. Now just hold a second there. This isn't like Peter. This isn't Moses. This isn't Joe Schmo. This is Jesus. The Son of God felt that in his life, he needed to set aside some time to pray. The Son of God felt that he needed to set aside some personal time to connect with his Father. How dare we think we don't? Jesus needed that time. Here's another passage in Matthew, a different time. Not the same thing. It says, after he had dismissed the crowd — there was a crowd of people there — he went up, Jesus, went up on a mountainside by himself to pray. Later that night, he was there alone. Jesus, again, on another occasion, said, look, you guys go away. I need some time with my Father. And of course, many of you know the story of Jesus praying in the garden right before his crucifixion, and how he was full of anguish. And he says, Father, you know, if there's any other way, but nevertheless, not my will, but your will be done. He took time. Jesus, the Son of God, took time to connect with his Father. Why don't we? Do you take time? Do you take any time? Are you too busy to have time to just — and it doesn't have to be fancy. It doesn't have to be like, well, I need to set aside 3 hours today to read my Bible. I mean, that would be great, but try 3 minutes. That's a start. But do we have time for that? Do we have time to pray? Do we say, hey, I'm praying for you sometime when I get to it, perhaps after the game? We need to have time connecting with God. There's a book written by a guy named Bill Hybels. It was called Too Busy Not to Pray. That's a really cool book. And I'll throw it on our Facebook page tomorrow so you can look at it. But his whole point was that we get so busy that we need to make prayer a priority. We need to make connecting with God a priority, because that's going to help us through the rest of the stuff anyway. But the problem is, we get so busy, we don't have time to connect with God. So when we get simple, when we simplify, it gives us time for connecting with God. The second thing is that simplicity creates time for connecting with believers. How often does your connection with other believers, other Christ followers, get pushed aside because you're too busy? Sorry, I can't make Prime Group tonight because I've got this thing going on. I can't be there next week because I got this thing going on. And eventually I'll come to worship with everybody, but I'm kind of busy right now. I got this work thing that's going on, and it's an extra project, but it's going to be a lot of money. And I know you're here, and I'm not trying to be like, oh man, you suck. I mean, maybe I am. Maybe I suck. But we let busyness push aside this time, and we need each other. You don't just need to connect with me. I need to connect with you. We need each other. We need to share our burdens and our struggles and our joys and our triumphs. But yet we get so busy, we don't have time for this, because we got all this stuff going on. And I'm just making a case here that, you know what, let's simplify some things, and then we'll have time for connecting with other believers. The third thing that simplicity creates time for is connecting with our neighbors. with our unbelieving neighbors, with people outside of the church, with people that are not Christ followers. Again, we get so busy. We don't have time for rubbing shoulders with our unbelieving neighbors. We don't have time for being with people that need the love of Jesus, but we sure do have enough time to get that football game in. We sure do have enough time to make sure that we make it to, I don't know, whatever practice we've got to go to. And the thing about it, too, is that we're not even, you know, even if we make time to be with our neighbors, we can't actually help them with a need. Like, oh, I'm rubbing shoulders with you finally. Yeah, but sorry, I can't really help you with that. I got to go right now, by the way. And we don't have time for connecting with neighbors. You know, and we started this series the very first week with the story of the Good Samaritan, the parable of the Good Samaritan, where there was someone that was in need. And the priest didn't have time. And the Levite didn't have time. And we get so busy that we don't have time for these things. And I'm just talking about simplicity gives us some of that margin. Just some extra time where, yeah, maybe we are watching the game because, hey, I got nothing else to do. But if there's a need right away, boom, I've got something that I can help with. That we've got that extra space, that white space, that margin where we have time to do that. And I will be honest with this, and we're going to talk about this in a little bit, especially when we get to our core value. But many churches are guilty of this. And if you go to MC3, if this is your church home, that's great. If you go somewhere else, I'm not trying to bash anybody else. I'm just saying that the reality is, and I was part of a church like this, where churches get our calendars so busy that you don't have time to actually be with people. You're too busy learning about how to share Jesus with them than actually have time being with them to share Jesus with them. You're too busy learning about meetings. And I'm telling you, I would have weeks in a row where I had a meeting Monday, a rehearsal Tuesday, another meeting or prayer meeting on Wednesday, and teaching, and then just my whole week was full of church. And so we at MC3, this is one of it's one of our core values, and I'll get to that in a second. But we don't have a lot of that stuff, and I'm just telling you that we don't have a lot of different ministries. We don't have a lot of different opportunities like, oh, we could have this thing for those people that do that. You know, that's great. There's a lot of churches that have that thing for those people that do that. We won't. Because we as leaders, we as the planters, we developed what God has called us to do as a church. We want you to be involved with your unbelieving neighbors, not caught up here at church. And there's going to be times we have to come here. There's a mission meeting next week. That's important. But do you understand? Like, we're trying, and even those things, we try to have our meetings on a night you're already here. We try to do meetings on Sunday mornings as much as possible so that you're already here and you can just stay for it. But we don't do that, and I'll talk more about that in a little bit. But we want you to be a part of your community. You know, join a local sports league, not the Christian one, not the church softball league. Join one where people swear. Don't swear back. But rub shoulders with people. Be a part of your community watch group. Simplicity makes margin so that we have time for helping others. And here's the thing, and I'm very honest with you about this. I did not intend this while I was preparing it, but as I look back on my material just last night, there's an interesting little correlation with these three C's. There's connecting with God, connecting with believers, and connecting with neighbors. And honestly, I didn't mean to say maybe God's trying to say something here. But connecting with God looks a lot like worship or congregation. If you were to, you know, join together to worship congregation. Connecting with believers looks a lot like community. That looks a lot like community and you know, maybe being in a prime group. And connecting with neighbors, that sure looks a lot like caring. So I don't know. I mean, if you were to develop a church based on some things you find in this concept, maybe, you know, you'd have C1 be community, C2 be congregation, and C3 be caring. And that's what the church is about. And that's all we're about. And that's why it's simple. And that's why it's that way on purpose. You're not going to find C5, C6, C7, C8, C9, C10, C12, C79. Because we want to stay focused on what God has called us to do. On some of those simple things. So, making margin. Now I'm going to get really personal and probably offend half of you in the room. And if I don't offend half of you, I'll offend the other half. So how about that? Here are some things. And before I even get into this list, and this is just my brainstorm, and maybe you're like, Sean, every time you share an application, it never makes any sense to me. So feel free to come to me afterward and say, here's an area you never touch on, because I'm just me and I've got my frame of life. But here's some things that I've kind of, as I'm brainstorming, thinking, what are some things that make us busy? And as I said about the pack, these things that slow us down and keep us from doing what God has called us to do, I want you to understand that I am not saying that most of these things are wrong. All I want to do is get you thinking. Because something here might be your issue, and you might be doing the same thing, but it's not an issue because of the way you're managing it. And so my point here is not to say, here's the list of things you need to do to love Jesus. That's not my point at all. And if you walk out of here with that, you completely miss what I'm saying. My idea here is, like, let's just start thinking about these things. What things are we carrying around that are slowing us down? And you might be carrying a different set of things that I'm carrying. So these are things that I call busiers. We even talked in this series about not making rules and lists of rules, because that's not the issue. And you can't look at this list and say, oh, yeah, I can't sit here and say, well, that's one John's struggling with. Good thing I'm perfect. That's not the idea. This is for you and you alone, you and your family. Like, think through, what are some of these things? So the first thing that I call a busier, things that make us busy, is work. We get busy with our jobs. And, in some sense, Scripture says we need to care for our families, we need to provide for our needs, and God has given us work, and we need to work. And I'll talk about rest later. But here, the question is sometimes it's not an issue of work as it is an issue of the money, the stuff. And I'll say, it ain't about the money. You don't need your... Anyway, it's not about that. But my question is, for you, is the overtime pay worth it? Is that extra money worth it? And it may be. It may be what you need. Wow, we really got ourselves in a hole, or we had this huge need, or my mom was getting treatment and I need to pay for it. Whatever. It may be. But the question you need to ask yourself, is it? Is it keeping, is it slowing you down from doing what God has called you to do because you're making some extra money? And it might be a lot of extra money. Is it worth it? Or is it worth the extra hours at the office, at the plant, at the business, where you're not at home with your family? You're not able to have time to love God and spend time studying His Word or praying or any of that because you're too busy. You have to be up at 2 a.m. and back to bed at 1 a.m. so that you can get up at 2 a.m. and go do your job all the time. Is it worth it? I heard of a story recently of someone who got a job that required hours of travel every day. Is it worth it to be that far away from family? To be that far? Well, because of that, and I talked to Brian about this already. Ironically, Brian had to leave this morning because he had to fly away to one of his jobs this week. Is it worth it? Is all that extra money, is that extra prestige, is it worth it when it comes to what God has called us to do? And I'm not saying yes or no for you. I'm just saying you need to think about it. Because we are busy and we don't have time to do the things that God has called us to do. The second thing, tech. Technology. Facebook. It always starts, I'm just talking from my own life, perhaps somebody that I might have known, such as me. It's always a quick status update. And then, half hour later, like, did you know that the Coopers had a party at the church last night? Did you know? You're my friends on Facebook. I don't want to start, sharing all your secrets. But, it's one real quick thing. Kendra and I found we've got these smartphones, and I'm not saying that the solution to life is this. Believe me. This might be cause of the problem. But we found how interesting it is. If my phone is nearby, like that, how I will just do this. Oh, right, you're talking to me. Sorry, I'm teaching right now. And how I'm like right away and oh, okay, so that's who's playing today. 4:25, it's gonna be a football game today. Some Giants playing some Cowboys. I'm serious. I wasn't even fooling around there. We get distracted by technology. We have all these things. Just that constant thing. What about email? Are you always checking? Okay, checking email. Maybe they replied. One of the things that I do, and sometimes maybe I'm sharing this for the first time with some of you, I don't check my email on my day off. And if you're trying to get in touch with me on my day off and it's through email, sorry. I do that because right away I'm just, okay. We'll get to texting in a second. See, you're going to say, I knew you would, yeah. See that? That sound. I hate that sound. I hear it in my sleep, even if it doesn't happen. Although some of you text and you don't realize that it's actually sending them to me at 5:30 a.m. every day. What am I talking about? Email. I don't check my email because as soon as I'm at my computer, it's just this real quick thing. And, oh, I just need to check that. Oh, I need to reply to that person. Oh, I need. And 2 hours later, 3 hours later, my daughter says, Dad, I thought you said you weren't doing any work today. I thought we were going to have time as a family today. And that gets me every time. She knows. My kids know. My family realizes when I'm spending too much time doing technology or work or however you want to draw those lines together. How about phones and texting? The same thing, you know. I personally don't answer texts or phone calls before 11 on the weekdays. That's my studying time. That's when I'm studying and I'm praying. Does that make me more spiritual and awesome than you? Not at all. But I'm just saying, I know that as soon I leave my computer lid closed, because as soon as it's open, and I am, dude, I will go over and say, I just need to real quick do this thing, then I'll study and pray. I'm telling you, 2 hours later, I'm like, what the heck? It's lunchtime. And maybe none of you are like this, but I just find we get caught up in these things. Technology is something that slows us down. TV, DVR, you know, how fixed are we on making sure we get our show? But we're not that fixed on making sure we spend time with God. We're not sure that we make that kind of schedule priority for prime groups, for connecting with other people, for rubbing shoulders. We get caught up in saving, you know, TV, sports, all that stuff. You know, let me just throw it out there. Consider a technology blackout. Consider something like that. You know, there's a day that you set aside. You know what? Facebook, guys, I'm off today. I'm off the grid. Boom. Consider something like that, because we get caught up in these things that are making us busy, and before we know it, we don't have time to do the things God has called us to do. Moving on. Next one. Kids. Our kids make us busy. And some of that is a reality. We got to change diapers. So don't change diapers. Pastor said, I don't need... yes. No, but here's the thing, and obviously that's legitimate. Care for your kids, feed them, love them, do all that stuff. But somewhere we bought into this lie that we need to have well-rounded kids, that our kids need to be involved in everything. They need to do everything because they need to be well-rounded. You know what? That is a lie, and God doesn't feel that way. Because when God called you, when He created you, first of all, He made you different than the people around you. And then, as a believer in Christ, you've been given spiritual gifts, gifts from the Holy Spirit that God has given to you. And He didn't give you all of them. He gave you certain ones because He wanted to use you as a part of a bigger picture. But yet we got caught up with our kids need to be well-rounded. And so we've got them going to sports practice on Monday and ballet on Tuesday, gymnastics on Wednesday, chess club on Thursday, band on Friday. And we're wondering, why don't we have any time for anything? Because we're busy thinking, well, they need to be well-rounded. And we think this, you know, it's maybe this issue of we want to impress people. Well, my son is fluent in 7.3 languages. What does your son do? Oh, he's in the T-ball team. like, we have this idea that we have well-rounded kids, and it's just not true. So, and I'm just, again, these are just things to think about. I'm not saying it's wrong to have your kids in sports or gymnastics. I'm just saying, is it worth it? And that was an issue for us. Like, our girls were involved in ballet, and we felt like if they loved it and wanted to do it, we would keep doing it. But they didn't love it enough to make it worth the family time, the time we sacrifice in other areas. And so they don't do that. Tasks. The next thing is tasks. This is probably my biggest thing. This is the projects. These are those things you've got out there that you want to do, you want to get accomplished, the things that you want to get done. You know, it's remodeling. Maybe it's something like that. Or maybe it's this, you know, I really want to learn to play the bassoon. And so, you know, you spend all this time practicing and going to your lessons and all that, and just so you can learn to play the bassoon. You know what a bassoon looks like? It's long, it goes, but it's deeper than that. So it's like, anyway, it does cool stuff. Anyway, the bassoon, like, is that worth it? That's my question to you. Is getting that degree worth it? Is finishing that certification worth it? Is the time worth it? These are the questions that we need to answer when it comes to those tasks. Is it really important to remodel, to renovate, to refurbish? Does the bathroom really need to go from, well, we only have marble countertops, and now we need granite countertops? Like, and there's nothing wrong with marble or granite countertops. Don't, like, walk into someone's house and be like, oh, you don't love Jesus. Look at your sink. But do you understand what I'm saying? These things, these projects, these tasks. That's my time limit. It was funny. I was reading a book a few years ago. It was on time management. And it was about the things that take your time away from things. It was called time traps. These traps that catch you up. And about halfway through the book, and I am not kidding, I'm not just trying to be dramatic here. Halfway through the book, I was convinced that the thing that was wasting the most of my time was reading that book. So I stopped. It was a time trap. I shouldn't say it was horrible reading, but it just wasn't the most exciting book in the world. And I'm like, I could be spending time doing something I enjoy or doing something. So I got rid of the book. Sometimes we need to get rid of those tasks because they're slowing us down. They're weighing us down. Rest. The next one is rest. Talk about doing stuff. This is talking about doing not enough. Sometimes some of you just sleep too much. Okay. And I am the chief sleeper. Okay. I'm talking, preaching to the choir. I am one of the guys that loves. That's not supposed to. There. I love to sleep. But, you know, if you waste your day away sleeping and wonder, why don't I have time for anything? Because you're in bed. Get your butt out of bed and do something. Go sleep. Well, I shouldn't say that. Never mind. But we spend too much time resting. Well, I've got to have my recreational activity. And that's fine. There's nothing wrong with those things. But if all of your time is focused on that, so you don't have time to do the things God has called you to do, it's a problem. And then the last thing is church. Some of you have been, are, or will be busy with church. And this is risky for a pastor to say. But some of us are not doing what God has called us to do because we're doing church instead. And I know you're like, well, you said earlier to spend time. I know. It doesn't make sense in just that way. But do you understand, we sometimes get so caught up in being busy in church. And I said that, you know, we are a simple church on purpose. We don't have a biker ministry. Bikers are cool. They're bikers. But we don't do anything for them. We don't have a hockey club. Hockey is fun. Right now we can have a hockey club and charge admission because it'd be better than what the NHL is doing. But we don't have those ministries because we want to be focused on a few things and doing those few things well. And sometimes churches get caught up in having so much stuff, as I said that before. And this is hard, and I'll just be honest with you. We have to fight to stay simple as a church. We have to fight it. It means that I say no a lot to people. And I've said no to some of you about ideas. The elders have said, no, we don't want to do that. It's not because we don't like you or your idea. It's just that we have to fight to stay simple and stay focused on these few things. It also means that when we decide there's something we need to do, we try to fit it in. Starting in November, it's going to be a thing called Prime Basics. And Scott's going to be leading a Prime group through just some of the basic things of our faith and what it means to follow Jesus and what it means to understand some of these things. And we could have added a night that was come for that night. We intentionally said, no, we're going to take over a Prime group, and that Prime group will go through that together. So we're not adding to it. Hard stuff to do sometimes. Anyway, and again, if some of you are busy with church, it's a good thing, but it's not what you should be doing. And actually, Scott, last week, he had asked me to plan. Scott and Michelle, he does all the Ignition video stuff for the kids back there. And I didn't ask his permission before I told this. So I hope it's not all that too deep. But they obviously went away to Jamaica for the last week for their 25th and 10th anniversary and then brought the stinking storm back. Thank you. Which was like the first time in 20-some years that Jamaica's ever been hit head-on. All right. Anyway, but they were planning for everything while they were away, and it got to the point where they couldn't fit Ignition for that last Sunday, and they weren't going to be here. They had stuff going on. It's their anniversary, 25 years, which is awesome. And so Scott said, look, we need some other people to do it. And, you know, in one sense, somebody could look and say, well, you guys dropped the ball. What about responsibility? What about your commitment to the church and to the Lord? Your marble countertop? I don't know. I don't think you have marble countertops. But the point was that, you know what, that had to drop because there were some more important things going on. There were some things that were bigger. And so we just need to watch that. We need to avoid getting caught up. And for me, this is hard. I'm a pastor. This is my job. This is my ministry. This is my love, is the church and is Jesus. And sometimes it's hard for me to distinguish, am I working or am I loving Jesus? And sometimes my work gets in the way of loving Jesus. And this is a hard week for that. Everybody just had one quick thing. That was a one quick thing kind of week. And one quick thing led to another quick thing, led to another quick thing. And before I knew it, wow, I'm 3 days behind. And so this is an issue. And the issue here, and this is our core value as a church. And I'm sorry, I'm killing ignition, or ATU. Here's our core value as a church. It says, it's simplicity. This is the last one we're talking about in the series. It is easy for the church to overcomplicate the Christian message with too many programs and activities that pull people away from our primary job, which is following Christ. For this reason, we value keeping our programs and process simple and focusing on what we do best. So we do a few things, we do them well. And so that's a core value. Stay simple. Life wants to make you busy. This whole series, and I would have loved to review it, it's go. This is who God has called us to be as His church. This is who God has called us to be as His followers. And sometimes, I mean, last week I talked about, hey, you need to always be ready to serve. And this week I'm saying, you know, say no. How do those things work together? They just do. It's complicated that way, but that's okay. I'm okay with that tension. We talked about today about not getting caught up in sin. And the first week I said, give grace, even if people are caught up in sin. But these are the things that God has called us to do as a church. We've gone through these core values that we have. They're all available online, mc3church.org. And you can click on the point and listen to them. I would encourage you to do it because this is kind of a diagram, a skeletal outline, I guess you could say, of MC3 and who we are and why we do what we do. But this morning, you know, there's so many things that we can get caught up in. And they're not bad. I'm not saying that they're bad in themselves. But God has called us to stay away from the sin, so that we can be an example to the people around us and show Jesus' love through that. But we get so busy that we can't do it. Would you pray with me? Father, I pray right now. I bounced on a bunch of issues and maybe didn't even touch an issue that someone's struggling with here. And we know that these things in themselves are not bad. They're not sinful for the most part. But I pray, God, that You would open our eyes, open our hearts, open our eyes and our hearts to where we need to change. It's so unfortunate, God, that most of the time people around us can see it, but we can't see it ourselves. So I pray that You would show us what areas we need to get rid of, what things we need to lighten up, what things we need to do to be more simple, to simplify, so that we can be all about what You've called us to be, that we can be doing what You've called us to do. Thank You for Your great love and Your patience with us, that we are royalty, that we are Your chosen people, and that we've got something incredible to live up to. Help us to do it. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen.